Okay, good morning. We find ourselves in Shmuel Beis Perek Gimel this morning, and things are not easy. The Jewish people, as we see, when they are bored, when things are maybe going like somewhat okay with their enemies, we look inward, we start fighting. And that's what happens. It's not clear who should take over after Shaul dies, and you have Yoav with David. Yoav was a general. You have Avner with Ish-bosheth is Shaul's son. And they have their first exercise, which eventually turns into a battle. And hundreds of people are killed. And, you know, you need to ask yourself, like, what's going to happen? We know David becomes king. But, like, how does he get there? What happens that leads to him eventually becoming king? We know very little about Ish-bosheth, the other side. And we'll see if that's like relevant. So this parak is going to be split into really a few different sections. Pasuk Beis through Hey, which is where we'll begin, is just a reframe, going back a little bit in time and telling us about David's family life. David, at this point, is married to two women who are with him, and that is Abigail and Ahinoam. And he has another wife, Michal. Michal, who is given to a different man, that's Michal bat Shaul. We're beginning with Pasuk Beis. Vayaldu l'David banim b'chevron. So David now is in Chevron. He has some kids. V'yibechoro Amnon. V'achinom ha-Yisraeli. You're not going to hold cup, but if you can. Meaning we're going to remind everyone of this. But all these names, a lot of these names, are going to be very, very relevant later on in the Sefer. So his oldest son is Amnon. Anyone know anything about Amnon? Besides for the pizza that he makes? No? Okay, so 13th Avenue. 13th Avenue. Wow. 13th Avenue.
Well, he had his first son could be given to live on 12th Avenue.
Okay, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. We're like sort of mishpacha now. Yeah, okay. So that's number one. Amnon is his oldest son, and we'll learn about what he does later on. Umishnehu Kilav la'Avigayo. His second son is Kilav. So Kilav is a less popular name in the world today. The Kilav is probably very, very quieter son. Kilav, some say, Rashi writes, Umakom Acher who Kore Oso Mishnehu Daniel. So some say that his second son's name was Daniel, and some say it was Kilav. Different names for the same son, reflecting different parts of his personality. The Gemara writes that Kilav was one of four people in Jewish history to never sin. They never sinned. That's a big deal. Who are the other three?
Yishai,
David's dad, right? David's son, Kilav. Who else? Nope. Binyamin and Amram. And Amram. Amram, father of Moshe. So Rabbi Charlap, Zatzal, just passed away. I heard this thought from his daughter, Rabbi Zinuberger. And her father always said, if you're a leader, you're going to make mistakes, by definition. And that's why in the beginning of Vayikra, Asher Nasi Echatam. The Nasi is going to make mistakes. And we've learned about Shaul and David. The Nasi's responsibility is to admit and to own their mistakes. But being a leader, that's part of being a leader. All these people are supporting characters in Tanakh. Binyamin, Kilav, Yishai, Amram. They made it. They're here. They're in the biblical narrative. They're in the Tanakh, but they're not the main character. They're supporting. Supporting, right? You can be somebody that is untainted completely, but the leadership and what you do, it comes with less risks. And there's less risks, there's less mistakes. And that's what Rabbi Charlap's ha'ara here. Yeah.
So I think when we learn the Gila, I'm not sure what, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he said that Mordechai is not a human name.
Yeah.
Right? Am I correct?
Correct.
Right. So when we're learning Navi, Chumash, at what point do we see that people start taking on non-human names? I guess they're taking on names of the times that they live in, which are from different cultures.
I don't know. Mandy's asking.
His name doesn't sound like it's, to me, at least to me, I don't know too much. It's not like a Hebrew name to me. But do we have it in the
So there's a great sefer that I have at home. It's in English. Actually, Art Scroll translated it. Sorry, it's in Hebrew. Art Scroll translated it to English. It's called Ishei Tanakh. It's a contemporary sefer. It's every personality in Tanakh, right? Art Scroll then, and then every pasuk. Well, for Moshe, it's not going to quote every Vayidaber Hashem of Moshe Leimer, right? And every pasuk. Chazal, you know, about this individual. And usually it gives you a little bit about the meaning of the name. Why is it important? Before we had our kids, when Sarah was pregnant, we like, pulled out this sefer. We're like, let's look through. No, it was like, not look it up. We didn't know what we wanted to name our child. This was very, very helpful. I liked Avigail. We did. And we looked it up. Avigil. One of the interpretations of Chazal is Avi, right? When she was born, Avi, her parents were Gil, were very, very happy. Gila, Rina, Disa, Vechet. That's one of the interpretations of what Avigail means. There's Gematria, there's different things too. But I'm not sure. But then it became a Hebrew name. Like Esther, everyone's going to agree, Esther's a Hebrew name. It became, people say, Farshim on the Tanakh, on Megillas Esther, say Ishtar was a Persian goddess back then. That's why Hadassah, he asked there, she had like a Hebrew name and an English name. Then it became a Hebrew name.
Alexander.
Correct. There's a Gemara about Alexander. Alexander Mokdon, Alexander the Great, was a good to the Jews. And Shimon HaTzadik decreed that every boy that was born should be named Alexander. And some Chazal say that every girl should be named Alexandra. And that's where you had that name and it came into the, you know, Jewish family.
Our oldest one is Shana. Her human name is Trajan Shoshana. So you just happen to find out from Darcy Brand's status, name is also Trajan. What she told us was that at some point we started calling them our girls Trajan for Mother Teresa.
Okay.
Because she was nice to the Jews.
She was nice to the Jews. Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you say it like a name like Mordechai? Why is it not a Hebrew name?
Right. So the truth is, Chazal is a, because there is another Persian god named Marduk. So some suggest that that's where the name came from. Others disagree by Mordechai, and they say it comes from the Ktores. Mar Duror is one of the ingredients in the Ktores. And if you read Unkelos on the words Mar Duror, it is Mara Dachya. And maybe that's where Mordechai's name comes from. It's not clear. You know, listen, a few years ago, remember there was the terror attack in the shul in Har Nof, where Moshe Tversky, where Meir Tversky from Ar Rosh Yeshiva at YU, his brother was murdered in that attack. There was a Druze officer that was killed also in that attack. And some people named their child after that Druze officer. I don't know what his name was, to tell you, was a Jewish name, it wasn't a Jewish name, but sometimes that like creeps into our, you know, our community, our family.
If it wasn't in the Torah, any name that doesn't appear.
Yeah. So
the Torah is not the Jewish.
I'm not saying that. So that was the second thing I was going to say. It's like, it's not clear what do we call a Hebrew name and what is not. Rav Chaim Kanievsky, I'm not even sure if I should quote this because it's going to, not going to maybe, people are going to not be happy. He had very strict rules on what was considered a Hebrew name and what was not considered a Hebrew name. So for him, if it didn't was not a biblical name in the Tanakh, but it was, let's say, Gila, Rina, Ditsa, those are not names. Those are emotions. So he's Simcha. He didn't like those names, right? Because they were not names in the Tanakh. Most people don't agree with Rav Chaim Kanievsky over here, but he had very, you can understand where he's coming from. These are the rules. These are names and those are not names. Others didn't agree with that, but you have to say at some point to say what is a name, what's not a name. What? So Moshe is debated amongst the Mefarshim. Was Moshe's name a Hebrew name? Or was Moshe's name an Egyptian name? Bas Paro gave him the name. Not 100% clear. Some Mefarshim say that the name was given to him by Batikra. Second. Right. Meaning it can originate as a, but it's in the Torah. So once it's in the Torah, then it becomes a Hebrew name. Again. Yeah. Vayigdal hayelav tivieu lebas paro. He grew up and they brought him to Bas Paro. Vila levain, vatikra shemo, Moshe. At that point, this is already after Moshe is in the palace for a while, they called him Moshe. But Tikra Shema was in feminine, so most people understand it as Tzipora called him Moshe. But others say, no, maybe it was Miriam. Miriam and Yocheved were taking care of him in the palace or in their home and bringing him back. And it's not clear. The Nitziv writes it was definitely, he finds an Egyptian word, which means the kid. And he says that's what Moshe really meant back then, the kid. The Sforno thinks it doesn't mean that. I mean, Hamaya Mishisihu is reflexive. And actually, you learn a lot from Tanakh in terms of the guidelines almost of how to name a child. If you want to use your own name, they use the experience of how she found him, right? As part of the name, Min Hamayim Mishisihu. Others use names about, you know, that their feelings of appreciation to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shmuel, we're in Sefer Shmuel now. The Ibn Ezra writes, and somewhere in Sefer Dvarim, that the word Shmuel is a conjugate, really, of Shmo Kel, the name of God. Like it's a powerful name to give a child, Shmo Kel, Shmuel. So you see that you have a lot of names like that. Rabbi Lam Zatzal has a drasha where there's one of the Nisim in Parshas Naso who has the most names of God in his name. Shalumiel ben Surishadai. Okay? Shalom Kel ben Sur Shakai. You know who that was? That was the Nasi of Shevet Shimon, who was with the Moabite princess, Kazbi Batsur. So he says, like, the drusha's name, Rabbi Lam was so good with words, was another Shlemiel. Shalumiel ben Sarishakai. Another Shlemiel. Because he said, like, his mother gave him all of these honorifics, but he never lived up to them. Right? You have to live up to your name sometimes. You can't just give the name, wind up the kid, and okay, you be a Shalumiel ben Sarishakai. He became a Shlemiel. He became probably worse than a Anish Lamil. Okay. Umishnehu. Kilav la Abigail Ashit Naval Karmeli Vashishi Avshalom. His third son's name was Avshalom. Avshalom, we didn't know, but now we're like told that David has another wife, or maybe a Pilegesh ben Ma'acha bas Talmi Melech Yeshur. He has a third son whose name is Avshalom. So oldest is Amnon, second is Kilav, and third is Avshalom. V'harivii Adoniyahu ben Chagit. Adoniyah, sorry, ben Chagit. V'achamishi, Chagit is now more of a common name in Israel. Very Israeli, a woman's name. V'achamishi Shfatia ben Avital. Avital is a very common, more of a common name. And these are other wives. Pasuk, you'll see that Rashi, Vashishi Yitraim Le'egla, Ashes David, Elo Yildula Davi Bechevron. And then he has a sixth child named Yitraim, who was born to Egla. Rashi writes that Egla is Michal. Now that is Michal. And we'll see, was that born beforehand? Or they were born later? We're just, you know, putting everything here, a little bit about David's lineage. This is going to be very important, as David's and his family are going to play a unfortunate, pivotal role in the second half of Shmuel Beis, vying for leadership positions. So the age of all the kids and the order is important. Amnon, Avshalom, Adoniah. Okay, Kilav is a quiet guy. He was learning the Beis Medrash. He was quiet. He didn't sin. He was left alone. Everyone else. Okay.
Rabbi, how many wives did you say David had?
Six. What? In total?
Yes.
18.
18 wives. Wow. What was
how do you keep every anniversary? I don't know.
What's the question?
I don't know. Without a Google calendar, it's crazy. It's crazy.
What was the question? 18 is
what was the question?
What was the average amount of wives?
Rabbi, what was the question?
How many wives did David HaMelech have? The Gemara. Mara learns the most amount of wives that one can have is 18. Maximum is 18. Or for a king is 18. 18. I don't know. We don't know. It's not, we don't know. I'm not sure. Again, some of them were Pilagshim, and it was normal for kings to have Pilagshim. Okay. Help with carpool.
We don't have any kings. Shaul is the first.
Show that. No, what I mean is status. Other nations, kings had many wives. Okay, they did. And okay, we see that some of the wives that he married were the result of interactions that he had. Like Abigail wasn't somebody he planned necessarily to marry. But he did after Avigal's husband died. Michal, as well, was a result of Goliath and his relationship to Shaul. Bibi Yosa Melchama, Bein Beis Shaul, Bein Beis David, Vafner Haya, Mitchazek Beveit Shaul. This war with the house of Shaul continued. Will Shaul Pilegesh? Shaul had a Pilegesh. Here we go. Ushma. Ritzpa. Today, Ritzpa means floor, right? But that's what her name was. Ritzpa Bas Aya. Okay, Ritzpa Bas Aya. Vayomer El Avner. Who is talking? Vayomer can mean a. Is that feminine or male? Male, right? So who's talking here? It can't be Ritzpah's talking. Right? So who's talking? Vayomer Lavner, Madua Bata El Pilegesh Avi. Why were you with my father's Pilegesh? Who is talking here? Ishboshet. Ishbosheth is the king. Avner made him king. And Avner's is being accused of sleeping, of being with Shaul's Pelegesh. That is egregious. That's almost equivalent to Lord B'malchus. You're rebelling against the king. But it doesn't seem to be accurate. We'll see in a moment. Vayichar l'Avner ma'od al divrei Ishbosheth. Avner got not vayichar af means he was like emotionally angry and caught up in this. Vayichar means it was like almost like a controlled anger. He was like very disappointed, angry in a controlled way at Ishbosheth. What do you think I would do that? I am the most loyal guy. The two generals we're learning about, Yoav and Avner, are extremely loyal people. You think Harosh Kelev Anochi? You think I'm the head of a dog that I would go ahead and do this? Asher li Yehuda hayom asachesed in Beis Shaul Avicha el Achiv Amirehu lo him sisicha Beis David. But Tivkor Alai Avona Isha Hayom. He says, like, I am the guy that has been doing chesed with the house of Shaul my whole life. I made you king, not David HaMelech. And there is nothing that I would do that would jeopardize your kingdom. Oh, sir. Koyas Elokim La'avner V'chol Yosef Lom. Ki kasher nishba Hashem leDavid ki chen yaasalo lahavir hamamlacha mi beis Shaul lakimes ki say David al Yisrael va Yehuda midan viad Be'er Sheva. Avner, there must have been other moments, but Avner sees from this moment that Ishbosheth was not fit to be king. He put his support behind the wrong guy. It was clearly a mistake. We hear very little. We know very little about Ishbosheth. Very little. Why? He wasn't the right guy to be king. Just because your father is king doesn't mean you should automatically be the next leader. You need certain personality traits. And Avner is saying, you don't have them. You don't have them. And I think it's time that David HaMelech should be king. Now, he's a general for the other team. Like, what happens now? Like, that's not good. Right? V'lo yachol, pasuk yid aleph, od la'ashiv es Avner davar mi'ir asel oso. So Avner, out of respect and reverence and awe for Ishbosheth, like, just can't speak to him anymore. He can't, he's so annoyed with him that he can't talk to him. But also out of his fear of him, he like leaves the presence of Ishbosheth during this time. Vayishlach Avner malachim el David tachtav lemor. Lemi aretz lemor karsar bischa iti v'hine yadi imach v'asev elachas kol Yisrael. Avner, as a result of this, sends messengers to David HaMelech. And he says, I think it's time for the two of us. We don't want more people to die. Let's make a truce. Let's make a bris, a covenant between the two parties. We're done. David responds with a very strong request. I'll make you a deal. You want me to make a deal with you, make a peace treaty? It's one thing that I want to return. Micha, my wife was taken from me. She could not go in hiding with me because then she would have been murdered. She stayed and then was given to a second man. I want her back.
And can he take her back?
The great question. The Gemara deals with this at length. The Gemara in the second parak of Maseches Sanhedrin deals with this question. Because when a woman is married and then she's with somebody else, if she was intimate with that person, then she cannot go back to her first husband. It's called echalabal, echalabo, on purpose by, well, it's a complicated thing, but here she was married. So the Gemara writes that the person that she was married to understood what was happening in the situation and felt he was being taken advantage of too. This was wrong. It was public knowledge that David was married to Michal. But if he said no, Shaul would kill him. So what did he do? He took a sword and he put that sword in the middle of the bed. They have two beds, they have one bed, I don't know. But it says, Natal, he took a cherev and he put it in the middle of the bedroom. As a sign that we might be married to the public, but we're not married. And that was, again, appreciated because Michal also didn't want to be married to this guy. So internally, again, this is horrific, right? This power and thirst for revenge and feeds into not just the two people that are playing this, playing the David was on the run, but look what was happening at the home front. So David says, if you want a peace treaty, great. I would like my wife. I would like my wife back. David ben Shaul emor. I married her fair and square, right? Public knowledge. I killed 100 terrorists, Plishti terrorists, and I would like to be married. The guy's name was Palti or Paltiel. Different. Sometimes in the Tanakh they call him Palti or Paltiel. Ben Laish, right? Paltiel reflects on the nature that he was able to withhold his urges and do this in his bedroom. Paltiel ben Laish, and bring her back. Vayelech ita isha haloch uvacho achareha. So Ishbosheth sent messengers to Paltiel ben Laish and said, you got to send her back. When they left, Paltiel escorted her back to David and they were crying. It was emotional, right? How long they lived together? Two, three, four years. It's not so clear how many years how long this duration was. But the sad reality of their sham marriage, how would you say it, and her coming back, and caused a lot of emotion. Vayelech ita isha halochu vacho achareha. He walked her to a certain point, escorted her to Avner, and then Avner made sure that Michal was brought back to David HaMelech. Haloch uvacho, Rashi writes on this pasuk, al mitzvas mitzvah halachas imanu, shkos an hashanim na'atz chere beino leveina b'mita, lo nechshava. So Rashi writes, the emotions here were positive, that they never were nichshal in an aveira when they were together, just like more of a proud moment, not a moment of sadness or emotion in that way. Any questions?
So, hearing this story, there's a tremendous bond in David, and there must be great love between the two of them.
So yeah.
My question is, how long does it take before his eyes wander and he looks at Bathsheba?
Is Michal still alive at that point?
She's still alive.
No, she's not.
Oh, she's not.
No, okay. No. Okay, we have to.
Okay, so at least
I want to jump the gun. I want to protect him a little bit over here.
Years go by.
We'll see. It's not years here. David's king for 40 years. Okay, 7.5 in Chevro, meaning 7.5 before the Jewish people fully, all the Shvatim accept him as king. That's 33 years. Okay, that's going to happen soon. Not yet. Ishbosheth is still alive. He's still around. So in the middle of these 7.5 years, we're going to see he has very little public in the Tanakh interactions with his wives. One most famous one is with Michal. Clearly, because he probably listens to her the most, and she feels most responsible to take care of him.
Another reason why he was looking for someone because maybe he loved her so much.
Right.
He lost her.
Right. So the David and Bathsheba happens later. It happens later on. Okay. We're going to stop here for today. What we'll analyze Bezrat Hashem after Pesach is going to be, so they acquiesced to all of David's requests, and now they're ready to make peace, shalom, bris, between Avner and between Yoav, David Ishbosheth. How does that play itself out? Avner says, David says, oh, you have to come here yourself. So when Avner comes to make peace, right, is that going to work out? Is that going to work out the way that we want it? There's going to be everlasting peace between these two homes. Okay, Rabbi, wish everybody a wonderful
Rabbi,
day. Yes.
You have a question, hopefully quickly, on the eclipse. So I heard